Hi, this is Thomas, one of the hosts. Don't worry, I'm not here to beg for money. The Radiance podcast is in its first season beta, and we're going to make 6 episodes. Then we're going to see how well received it is before we commit to doing it on a regular basis. So if you like what you're about to hear, please let us know. Rate us on iTunes, drop us a comment on our website, radiancegamedev.com, or send us an email, hosts@radiancegamedev.com. Thank you so much for listening. We're here to help.
Welcome to the Radiance Podcast, an open discussion on how Christian faith integrates with game development. Here are your hosts, M. Joshua, Michael, and Thomas.
Welcome to the Radiance Podcast. I'm M. Joshua. I am the facilitator. First, I want to introduce my co-hosts. Today, we're joined with Thomas Henschel and Michael Yuzdevins. Thomas, how are things going up in Toronto?
We are doing well here. It's nice and snowy, the way it's supposed to be.
How are things going on Archmage Rises?
I have something really exciting that I'm going to be announcing in a couple of weeks. I just got really inspired on some new features that I'm not going to tell you what they are right now. But in a week, I'm going to come out and I'm probably going to make a video showing what the new features are. It's pretty exciting. Archmage Rises kind of has 3 pillars, how you play as a mage. There's the economic side, the battle combat side, and the political intrigue side. I've been working on the economic stuff and just really excited with what I have and where it's going.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that too. Michael, how are you doing? And how are things down in maybe less sunny than usual Orlando?
No, I'm in the Miami area. I'm north of Miami, south of Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, no, it's hot. It's always hot here.
And so how are things going on Heroes of Issachar?
Things are going well. Things are going really well. Did a pretty big announcement right around New Year's. We changed our development company name to Blue Mana. Got some really positive feedback on that because we have our app business. People were kind of confused by the fact that we were basically making this hardcore game. So we split that up. We made the announcement. The feedback from the community has been awesome. We totally revamped the site. We got some dynamite artwork up there. New screenshots, new videos with the new system that we've got in place. And the feedback has been really encouraging, because most of the time I'm sitting there programming thinking like nobody even cares that this game is being made.
Welcome to game development.
Yeah, it's been really, really awesome. So that's been great. And today we got notice that our Xbox One development kits are on their way. So we're now official with PlayStation, with Sony and Microsoft, and obviously we're on Steam. Yeah, so things are looking good. Now I just have to make a game.
That's really, really encouraging. I feel like a bad friend because I haven't looked at your website yet, so I'm going to do that as soon as we're done talking. Today, our guest is Josh Larson from That Dragon Cancer, one of the co-creators and developers on the game. How are you doing, Josh, and how's things going with That Dragon Cancer?
I'm doing great. Well, actually, today it's a bit cold here in Iowa, but otherwise, doing great. Yeah, we're excited to be continuing development. Now that our Kickstarter's over, we are focusing just on making progress with the game. So that's been great to just be able to focus on that and continue to flesh out the story and doing
well.
That's
awesome. Congratulations on being with a successful Kickstarter. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, it was. We didn't really know what to think, honestly. Starting a Kickstarter in the middle of November is scary.
Yeah,
please.
Right, well, everyone's already just about spent up all their Christmas money, and yeah.
Yeah, it was really, especially the first few days, it was amazing to see the level of support that we received from developers and from people that are really into indie games and people that just want to help support this kind of project. We heard from a lot of people who had some kind of similar story themselves, whether it was their own children who went through cancer or people that they had lost that really meant something to them. Yeah, so it was really great to see how this project has impacted so many people. You know, like when you're sharing your game with different developers or people in your community, it's always nice to get encouragement and support verbally, but you never know if that's going to translate into real actionable things. You know, I've worked on projects before that are like that, where people are supportive verbally, but you know, when it comes time to like support you financially or to like introduce you to influential people or, you know, just whatever metric that you is meaningful to you, it doesn't necessarily always happen. So yeah, we weren't really sure if that was going to be the case for us, but people really believe in what we do and are willing to support us that way. So it was just very encouraging and validating and kind of humbling in some sense, since it seemed like it turned into something that was a lot bigger than us.
I want to get much more into that. Just a little bit of an overview of what we're going to be doing today. I just want to hear a little bit about what we're all playing. And then we're going to get into much more about Josh and his story as a game developer and how his relationship with God is related to game development. Just hearing a lot more about that. And then we're going to get into a deep dive. Today's deep dive is going to be Papers, Please. So I'm really looking forward to that, getting into the nitty-gritty and the good stuff on that and what we can learn from it. So I just want to hear about what are you guys playing? How about Josh?
Sure. Crossy Road on my iPhone.
For those unfamiliar with that, how would you describe Crossy Road?
It's very cute. It's kind of like Frogger. It's sort of like, I would describe it as 3D isometric version of Frogger that's like more cute and funny with controls that are very much built for mobile devices. So yeah, that's fun. That's like my play 90 seconds here and there game. I've been checking out some of the 70 FPS games, which I know is like pretty behind the times.
Well, it's not that far behind. I mean, a lot of our listeners haven't quite gotten to that either. So
I've been playing through some of those obscure prototypes and whatnot. So that was kind of interesting. There was a Kickstarter recently to Azimuth. Yeah, that's it. The developer is based Omaha, I think. I was playing through some of his previous work. I thought that was cool. To Azimuth is sort of like X-Files-like adventure game where it's sort of mysterious. You're not sure exactly what's going on. It's very narrative-focused. And some of the work that the developer had done previously, Bracket Games, was kind of like that, but much smaller experiments. Just been playing through those. Those are the main things that come to mind right away.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that going back and checking out some of the 70 FPS log and the winners from that game jam would be really cool. So, Michael, how about you? What are you playing lately?
I have been playing, on the PC, I've been playing Sanctum 2. That game's awesome. For those people that don't know, it's a mix between tower defense and a first-person shooter. And it's just really well done. It's not as flashy as a lot of other games, but it does so many things well. So I've been having a blast with that. And then I'm sure you guys have seen, there's a site that has like over 2,000 old DOS games that you can play in your web browser.
Yeah.
So I've been playing Fantasy Empires.
I love that game.
Yeah, that game was incredible. It still is fun, you know. So it's like predecessor to like the Total War kind of games. I think that would probably be a fair comparison. But that game is just dynamite. But they have a game on there, really obscure. I can never find it, and there's little mention of it here and there if you search for it. But it was a game out of Europe, and it was called Mean, Ugly, Dirty Sport. They call it MUDS, just the acronym MUDS, but that's what it stands for, is Mean, Ugly, Dirty Sport.
That's kind of weird.
It's bizarre. It's a sports game, kind of, but there's an RPG element to it. So you have to like kind of like put your team together by guys on the market and putting them on your team. But it's all like alien stuff, but it's set in a fantasy world. just follow me here. Okay, so you've got all, and then there's humans there too, but like all of the trappings are all fantasy-esque kind of stuff, but there's all these like alien like kind of creatures that you can have on your team, and you have to play against guys, and you play and you bid money, and it has a very Blood Bowl feel to it. But you actually play the game out, so there's total twitch involved, and it's like football, but the object is to throw a fish into this barrel. And so that's how you score goals. And that's awesome. the barrel is on the other side of a moat that has a shark in it. And so you can throw it across for one point, or you can jump across, do a slam dunk for two, but you have to swim out before the shark eats you.
Wow.
For those at home, I think Michael switched to playing Balderdash. Seriously, man, like that does not sound like a real game.
I'm telling you, this is one of the best games you'll ever play. You should go look it up. Look it up. I'm telling you, it's
what
fan.
Was the name again?
It's called Mean, Ugly, Dirty Sport. You can put in MUDS, like M.U.D.S. Period. Go look at it. We should do a deep dive on it.
Yeah, okay.
Totally.
I'm gonna check it out, and I'll get back to you on that one. Thomas, how about you? What are you playing lately?
I've been playing a couple of different things. I've been doing some research on Grand Theft Auto Vice City because I just read the book about it called Jacked and wanted to kind of see a bit more about what they were talking about in the book. most of my time, every single day, I am playing this really awesome game called Trade Wars 2002, which at the time it came out was a very futuristic date. and it is an old school BBS game, came out in the 80s and was redone a little bit in 92 and then in 99. I just happened upon, I don't know, some website that was talking about old BBS games. And I was like, oh, Trade Wars. I remember Trade Wars. It was a huge part of my teenage years playing Trade Wars on my own BBS and my friends' BBSs. And I found a site where they host a game of Trade Wars. And so I jumped in and invited Michael in. And yeah, I've been playing Trade Wars. And for those who don't know what it's like, it is a text-only game where you have spaceships and kind of a Star Trek kind of, you know, there's the Federation and there's Ferengi that fly around and try to kill you and stuff. And you play a trader kind of like Free Space or Privateer coming from Origin. You fly from sector to sector and you buy goods and you sell them. You can build planets and you can build ports and you can invest in ports. And it's just crazy all the stuff you can do in this game. And it's all text. It's just so wonderful because I find it, because it's text only, it really engages my imagination. Like when I'm punching in to, let's move to sector, you know, 2144, that's kind of what it would be like on the spaceship. Like you'd punch in 2144 and then boom, you're there, right? And find out what's going on. So I've learned a lot by going back to these really old games that are text-based. As Sid Meier talks about, gaming is about, you know, interesting choices or interesting decisions. When you play these old games, they're pretty much all decisions. Like there isn't anything in between. It's just decision, 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 decision. And it's like so responsive. And I look at, you know, the latest console, 3D, whatever stuff, and there's so much time in between decisions because you have to watch a cutscene or you have to listen to something. Anyway, it's just been really eye-opening. So playing that game and all the economic side of that, I brought all that goodness and I put it into Archmage Rises. and so Archmage Rises, even though I said I wasn't going to reveal, I'll just hint at it. And there's a whole trading component to Archmage Rises of going around in the procedurally generated world, finding different merchants and trading between them. And that's a viable way to make money. So the game is not forcing you down a combat route like most games do. Yeah, it's just been really good. And I think I'm going to write an article about all the amazing economic things we can learn from this 30-year-old BBS game.
I'm kind of impressed. You guys have completely and utterly out-indied me in every way. This is one of those rare times where I'm coming to a podcast and I'm like, yeah, the game I'm playing is
so
the most mainstream game of last year is Dragon Age Inquisition. But yeah, I'm looking forward to, I know you guys were playing that too, so I don't know how far you guys got, but I'm really digging how much the game really asks of the player about faith. Like, just how much you get confronted every step along the way. Like, do you really believe this stuff? Like, do you really believe that the Maker is real? Do you believe, you know, that you're his messenger and, you know, all these things? And I just like the fact that it's really bringing the questions of belief and faith at to the forefront, even though it's through the fantasy veil.
Well, I was personally disappointed with Michael's answer because last podcast he said he was playing Dragon Age Inquisition and nothing else until he finished it.
Yeah, that didn't hold up.
I'm sure it's hard with a 70-hour game.
Oh, 70 seems like it'll be short based on my experience with it so far.
Cool path that you can do it in like 46 hours, but still, like, that's a lot of time.
Yeah. Every time I say I'm going to critical path a game, I never do. I just, I cannot do it.
Oh, shards. I'm going to go collect all the shards.
I'm such a sucker for that stuff. I mean, man.
All right. Well, anyway. I'm going to get a little bit back on track here. Josh, I want to hear from you. What is your favorite game from the last year and why?
I really have enjoyed Rockets, 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 which I know is like a super weird answer.
No, that's a perfect answer because that's a multiplayer indie game that I've had a lot of curiosity about, but haven't actually purchased.
That's been really fun because it's kind of like exploring the ballet behind battle, like behind dogfighting. That's why I really like the game. Back in the day, I used to play a lot more flight sims. I would love dogfighting. And Rockets, Rockets, Rockets is like this very condensed experience that focuses, you know, much more narrowly on dogfighting and what it's about.
Yeah, and it's a 2D game, right?
Yeah, it's actually 2D. Yeah, so it's not even like, it's almost like a demake of a flight sim dogfighting game, I think. That, yeah, that's actually the first thing that comes to mind. J.S. Joust, Johann Sebastian Joust, as part of Sports Friends. I love that game. That was, yeah, that's been awesome.
Yeah, I like how you're choosing specifically games that bring people together, bring players together in ways that games really haven't before.
Yeah, I'm definitely passionate about a lot of, like, single-player narrative games, but I haven't had a chance to, like, really invest in playing through all the ones that I've wanted to. But Joust is something that makes me feel like there's some sort of... I don't know if you guys... Maybe this is totally weird when I say this, and you guys don't relate to this, but sometimes when I'm listening to certain kinds of music, it's like I can feel the cultural history of the music as I'm listening to it.
Yeah.
Almost like there's some kind of RNA flowing through my veins or something.
I know exactly what you mean. That's how I got into Persian traditional folk.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of confessions coming out.
Joust actually makes me feel that way too. Like when I watch people play it, when I play it, you know, when I'm like looking at other players and staring at them from across our little circle or whatever, I feel like this tribal thing from thousands of years ago that somehow made its way into the 21st century using PlayStation Move controllers. I don't know. There's just something very primal about it that is compelling to me.
Okay, Josh, could you explain a little bit more of what it is for our friends and listeners who are unfamiliar?
Game that you play with, I would say, 4 to 8 people in real physical meat space, and you're holding these Move controllers, or I guess you could use Wii remotes or whatever, but traditionally the games, you use PlayStation Move controllers.
You can also use DualShock 3s or DualShock 4s.
Yeah. But basically you're like trying to hold it still for, you know, the controller that's assigned to you, and then each other person, you know, in your area is trying to hold theirs still, but obviously for you, you're trying to like knock theirs out. So it's kind of like a balancing game where you have your own device that you're trying to keep steady, and then other people are trying to like knock yours away. So, you know, it uses the accelerometer, so if you hit somebody else's, that like knocks them out, and it's basically last man standing kind of idea. So
like
that's
you physically
sort of
try to hit them?
Yeah, like physically with your hands. So you're sort of,
that's awesome.
It's like a dance / joust / balancing game. So
it sounds like an evil video game Twister.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like that, but definitely more competitive.
But yeah, Johann Sebastian Joust, honestly, it's a lot better if you just watch video of someone playing. I've read, watched, and heard a ton of things, but it just doesn't compare to actually playing the game. Cool. I think that's a good point to transition. Josh, I want to hear a lot more about you, how you got into games, how you got into that Dragon Cancer. But I just want to start with the first question I have for you is, how did you get into game development in particular?
It was while I was in school. I studied at Iowa State University and majored in art and design. Had a minor in entrepreneurship. I wanted to be a cartoon animator. So I was taking this, I was taking several animation classes with a couple of friends of mine. There were three of us, and we kind of stuck together, and we did all these projects together, lived in the computer lab together, essentially, doing our 3D animation thing. I guess, well, it was 2D and 3D animation, but we were way into cartoons. At the time, it was like the first couple seasons of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
So this was, what, 2004?
Yeah, and so we were really into animation. And our animation instructor said, hey, I want to start this game development class. Maybe you should be a part of it. We thought that sounded cool. You know, we've actually tried to, at that point, we had met with some other like programmers who were also students. And we were thinking, oh, what if we could try to create a video game? We weren't even really sure how that happened. So we joined the class and met a whole bunch of other computer programmers who were part of like the Virtual Reality Center, which turned out to be kind of a hotbed for game development, actually, because it was the closest thing that you could get, you know, if you went to the university. So we got together into teams, came up with our game ideas, and spent a semester trying to build a game, which for our game, you know, for 6 to 8 of us, like, consumed almost all of our free time.
Yeah.
As games tend to do when you try to develop them. So this was our first game. We didn't really know what we were doing. and it was called Treefort Wars, and we actually submitted it to the IGF, ended up being a finalist in the student category, which was amazing.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, so that was a 2004 IGF, I think. And so we went to San Jose, got to show our game. We like road tripped 10 of us in two Jeep Liberties with tons and tons of like squirt guns and a bunch of merch. It was crazy. Like, I can't even believe we had all this merch. Because today, you know, like with our game, with That Dragon Cancer, we really don't have much merch. Like, it doesn't make sense in a way.
Well, the economy's changed entirely with indie games in general. It's like people are starting to ask for boxes, but it's not like a common practice.
Yeah, so it was a crazy experience, though. We all totally wanted to make video games since then. Yeah.
And so what did you do in Treefort Wars?
Helped out with art direction, environment art, interface design, a little bit of the level design. We all kind of like, you know, pitched in with creative ideas. It was a team effort. 10 to 12 of us total. But by the end of the semester and kind of as we continued to keep developing it on the side as a group, it whittled down to like six people or something. That was my first experience getting into it.
And what did you actually, what was the gameplay like?
Well, the funny thing was there wasn't even barely any gameplay at all. I mean, like nowadays you totally couldn't get away with that. But nowadays you could also much more easily develop a game. We would have used Unity instead of building our own engine from scratch. But yeah, at the time it was cel shaded too, which was really cool for a student game. That was probably a major reason we got selected, honestly. The gameplay was supposed to be that you could set up your own tree fort club in a neighborhood and recruit other kids, get into like water fights. That was one part of it. Another part of it was design and build your own tree fort, and that would like help get kids excited to join your club or whatever. And then you could also have like lemonade stands and stuff. By the time we actually submitted the game, all you could do was you could kind of get into water fights. You could actually design and construct your own tree fort, which was a little buggy. It was fun. It was cool. A lot of fun.
If you don't mind my asking, what is your spiritual background and how has that related to games in general?
Yeah, good question. My family growing up, religion wasn't like a huge central part of how we lived our lives, I would say. We did attend church. Usually it was a Lutheran church, and it was mostly on Christmas and Easter kind of thing. My parents believed in God, but it didn't really influence how we lived very much. When I was in high school, I started going to a Bible study, you know, with other teenagers and stuff, and got a little bit more serious. Once I graduated and went to college, I just kind of, I guess you could say I became agnostic. I didn't consider myself agnostic, but looking back, that's basically what it was. Just didn't really care about religion or God or whatever. Maybe it was around sophomore year of college, I started to become more interested. My parents divorced, and they actually became a lot more interested in their relationship with God after that. And so that started to enter my life more. And I met the beautiful lady who is now my wife, Jessie. She was kind of asking me about it, and my other friends, you know, it just seemed like all the people around me were suddenly getting a lot more interested in the Christian faith especially. And so I started to reconsider it. Ended up going to this apologetics course that radically changed how I thought about the Christian faith, partially because it gave me a compelling reason to believe.
Yeah.
You know, like growing up, it was just sort of part of the social norm or like my environment.
Yeah.
But when I took this apologetics class, not through the university officially, but, you know, it was like a night class that just some guys were organizing, it made a profound impact on my life, I should say.
That's really interesting. I think what you said was your parents' divorce caused you to kind of investigate Christianity more. Is that basically what you said?
Yeah, it caused them to. And
yeah.
And indirectly, me as well, just because, you know, talking to them about it, my dad started inviting me to attend the church that he was attending, things like that. So, yeah.
Huh. That's interesting to me because I grew up in a Christian home and my parents divorced, and that caused me to go away from the faith. Because
yeah.
I was like, how could this possibly be true about this love and forgiveness stuff when my parents can't love and forgive each other? So that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to think that happening was kind of like God redeeming a broken situation, you know?
Yeah.
it's probably, I mean, both that and the apologetics course, I don't know, maybe that makes me different than the norm.
No, that's really, really cool. So how, bring that back into where you're at now, obviously, working on That Dragon Cancer, which is kind of, I don't know if you know this, but just in our private conversations, Thomas, Michael, and I have kind of been secretly suggesting that it's kind of the Passion of the Christ of games, or it could be something along those lines. How does saying that impact you? Or I hope that doesn't add too much undue pressure, but like, what is that idea? How does that strike you?
It's flattering, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sorry, I have a hard time saying thank you, so I just try to catch myself. When I was starting to get into game development, I always wanted to somehow combine my faith, partially because it was the same time, like I was getting into development and I was developing a much more authentic faith. So both of those ideas, I really wanted to like bring them together sometime or somehow. I wanted to, at the time, I thought, like, Christian games suck. I'm going to make a Christian game that doesn't suck, and I'm going to save the world, you know? Like, totally that kind of attitude.
I think we all go through that. Why do you think we all go through that? That's so weird, isn't it?
I don't know. I think part of it is because, like, you want to be the hero or something, and you think that you know better, and you're going to, like, you're going to be the dutiful servant and hero for God or something. I don't know what it is, but I wouldn't say I've done a 180, but I've totally changed my attitude since then, especially when I hear of like other projects that people might kind of say bad things about, and when I hear like people legitimately being impacted by it and very encouraged by it, you know, like to some degree, we just all have the different things that we're interested in and that appeal to us, and so it just seems presumptuous to say like, this game sucks and nobody should ever play it, when there's probably a good number of people who are actually encouraged by it. So I'm just kind of doing my own thing now and like following the vision that I would like to think God has given me, I guess, for video games. For That Dragon Cancer specifically, we definitely see it as more of a testimony than a gospel. You know, I would consider the Passion film as a very gospel-oriented film.
Yeah,
and I would consider our game as a very testimony-oriented film. So I don't think it's going to have the same impact. But
yeah, but I think that it's definitely a good clarification and comparison for us to know how to understand your approach better.
Yeah, we don't want to censor Ryan and Amy's faith and what their perspective is, because they're very devout in their faith, and so obviously that's going to be part of like how they respond to everything in their lives, basically.
Yeah.
So it's going to be in the game for sure, and you know, there are some parts that aren't as explicit, and then there are other parts that are a little bit more explicit, because they go to God in their time of need, they go to God when they are thankful, and you know, part of who they are. So it's definitely a part of the game, but it's more in the sense of like, this is my perspective, you know, from Ryan and Amy's point of view, this is my perspective, instead of, you know, trying to recount the times of Jesus or to write an epistle or, you know, all the other ways that you can share your faith.
Yeah, and of course, any time that anybody starts looking at That Dragon Cancer, it's very apparent that it's the Green family story. But since this is our podcast with you, and you provide a very different perspective into a viewport into the game at large, I guess my question is, how are you getting into the game as well? I guess, or where are we going to find you in the game as we get to play it when it is hopefully launched this fall? Is that correct?
We're not totally sure when a release date is. For the Kickstarter, we set the release date for October, or we set the like due date for the rewards or whatever for October. We're hoping it's before that, so mid this year.
Yeah, mid 2015. All right.
Just taking a step back, when Josh, it was interesting what you said about you know, Christian games that suck and how you want to make one that doesn't suck. I know for myself, I feel the exact same way. And, you know, it's part of the reason that we're having this podcast. I just had an interesting experience this week. As I mentioned, I was playing Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which came out 2003, I think was the year. The graphics by today's standards are like just terrible. You know, the things that you can do, there's like not very much and stuff. But anyway, so I'm playing this game and it's, you know, it's pretty well designed and whatever and stuff. And then I got into the shootout with some guys. They started charging me and attacking me, and the AI was exactly the same as a build I recently played of Michael's game, Heroes of Issachar. It was exactly the same as playing Heroes of Issachar. I couldn't believe it. And so it just reminded me of something that Brock Henderson, who's another Christian game developer, a couple of years back, and hopefully we can get him on this program, was a lot of the time the reasons that they suck are budgetary or tool reasons. And so when I was playing Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which is now 12 years old, I saw kind of the current state of a lot of Christian games. And so, you know, on the one hand, hey, that's pretty good because, you know, we're not stuck in the 80s anymore with Mario clones and whatever. But we're making that next leap. We're catching up. Anyway, I just thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, that is, you know, it's funny you say that because as I have gone through making this, as we've switched it from third person action to first person, having to develop it in that way, Each sort of baby step, each sort of thing that got working, I've kind of been using like those kind of like mile markers. And so like the first time I had the guy run around, I'm like, okay, I'm at Doom right now, basically. All right. And then, you know, yeah. And then like, okay, this is kind of Half-Life-ish. So it's good to know that I'm like 12 years back. I'm you know, maybe I can bump up another 5 years in another month or two. But it has been. But here's the problem, though, is what I believe has happened in the past is that people have gotten content with that. They say, this is good enough. You know, it's about as good as that. And it's a little bit of a surprise. I mean, I'll say every step of the way I've looked at the progress that I've made. And in one sense, I can see the final product and I'm like, man, I'm really far off. But also look at it and be like, oh, wow, this is really, really cool. I've looked at something and I've thought, wow, this is really, really cool. I've wanted to show it to people. And then once I've like had time to like chew on it a little bit, I've realized, wow, this is really not that great. It was really great that I got to this point because it's just starting from scratch and getting to this point is great, but it's not there yet. And I think I agree with you. I think there's been budgetary issues in the past for indie developers and Christian developers in particular, and tool issues and all that. But I also think I don't think they were setting their bar high enough.
Yeah.
I know Thomas, you as well. I mean, we are, and Josh and Ryan, I know that what I am encouraged by is the fact that the Christian developers that I have interacted with have basically said, no, our bar is where everybody else is at. We are not content to say, well, let's just make a game and we'll throw some faith in there. We'll slap some Christian on it and a bunch of Christians will buy it and everything will be cool. That is not happening. And that is very encouraging to me.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I think this is a good time to mention that in addition to this podcast, we are doing something special to help Christian game developers make better games. On February 20, 2015, in Orlando, Florida, we are having a Christian game developer conference. Now, this is not a passive conference where you sit back and just listen to talks. It's sort of like a writer's conference, the kind where writers bring their manuscript and get in-depth feedback from other writers or editors. So at Radiance Orlando, you and two other devs will deep dive into your game. This is a great opportunity for real feedback, ask questions, or just brainstorm ideas with other devs. Then you switch and do the same for them. This is an iron sharpening iron type conference. Now, just to be sure this is a good idea, Michael and I did an alpha version of this agenda last September. And what happened? It was super valuable. We even did it in Florida because, you know, it's important to have the right temperature and humidity for this kind of work. Now, we want to make it super easy for you to attend. It's at a hotel, all-inclusive. All you need to do is bring you and your game. And if this isn't enough, one night we go to a theme park and ride roller coasters. It's game dev and roller coasters. Seriously, you can't beat that. So if expanding your team for a few days with a couple of like-minded developers sounds good to you, then come on down to Orlando in Florida. You can get all the details on our website, radiancegamedev.com, and click conference. You can save $50 if you book by January 23rd. We look forward to seeing you there.
Josh, on your end, have you been encouraged by the changing tides and the influence that you guys have had on... I guess, have you talked to other Christian game developers, and have you been encouraged by... just the cross-pollination happening and the future of things in Christian game development at large?
Yeah, I really have. We've talked with a handful of developers, and it seems like people are coming out of the woodwork, kind of. Or maybe it's just as we, you know, continue to meet more developers, we come across people who are believers, and plenty of them aren't necessarily making games with explicit Christian themes, but they're just trying to be the excellent shoemaker, or whatever the metaphor is that C.S. Lewis uses. So yeah, it's great to meet more developers who share a faith, and especially, you know, with like the CGDC Facebook group, seems like we're meeting more people who are passionate about putting their faith into a game to share with other players.
Josh, can I question, because I went through the same sort of evolution of sort of theme and purpose with my project, and I've discussed this before. It was actually I had a real sort of epiphany when I was talking with M. Josh on another podcast, and we were talking about your game. And when they were describing your game, and the light bulb kind of went off for me, where it's like, oh wow, like there's another way to do this. So I've sort of gone through that, you know, I'm going to save a million people, you know, all by myself, and then, you know, sort of God convicted me. And it's like, yeah, you won't even talk to your neighbor. How, you know, like let's get this under control, okay?
Yeah.
But so where I'm at with my project is it has evolved a great deal, but the question I still wonder is, there can you envision a video game project that is explicitly evangelistic? The project that it seems like we kind of had envisioned initially, is that game still out there, or is that just, will that never work?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's going to take a lot of skill and nuance to pull it off. The way that I look at it is, when you build a video game and you want players to play it, it's an invitation, first of all. You're inviting a player to want to play it. So it's not something you can really force on people. You know, like even if you send someone a YouTube link, there's still some element of like, you can kind of force them to watch the first couple seconds because they'll probably just click on it out of curiosity.
Right.
With a video game, though, it's software that you have to install on something. The barrier is already like a noticeable amount higher. And then, of course, the fact that you're playing it, which means it's something that you're doing willfully, it makes it like all the more of an invitation, which is interesting because that parallels our faith. You know, definitely like grace is, you know, it's like a gift that you're invited to experience. And so, you know, when our churches tell us like how to spread the gospel, at least my church, I shouldn't speak for everyone, but my church says that it should start with a relationship. And even if like you don't have a really established relationship with that other person, you can at least start by sharing your story and your testimony. So before you get to the point where like you can do an awesome job with an evangelistic game, I feel like we're going to see testimony-based games simply because that's how you can share your faith easily. You know, like if you're not super experienced in being a preacher or being evangelistic, you just start with your own story, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I think with video games, it's such a developing medium that's still, you know, in kind of its early stages. I feel like that's sort of our role in it, is that we still don't fully know what we're doing. And so making a testimony is kind of a way to play it safe, or at least, you know, something that can be more realistic than a really ambitious Passion of the Christ type project.
Yeah, well, it's still dipping your feet in the water while also putting yourself fully out there.
and that's
the thing that I think is really disarming to a lot of people, and why you guys have gotten such incredibly positive press, especially from you know, publications that don't have any kind of faith affiliation or would typically seem to many Christians like they're averse to faith. And that's the thing that I've really, really been encouraged by, especially since I first heard about you guys, your game from the Polygon article written by Patrick Stafford 2 years ago, I think. And it's just super encouraging to be able to hear all that. And I want to get much back into a little bit more of your story before we get into our deep dive. And I still want to have plenty of time to do that too. But I want to hear more about how did you get involved directly with that dragon cancer? How did your story intersect with Ryan and Amy Green's story?
Yeah, great question. I think it was around 2009, something like that. I started a blog, God at Play. And it was kind of an identity, I guess you could say. You know, I thought maybe I could turn it into a game studio at some point. But I just started blogging, essentially. I was prototyping, learning more about game design, started becoming more interested in experiential aspects of video games. So less about systems and points and how those systems interacted with each other, and more about the experiential part of video games and maybe how that could relate to spirituality and my faith. So I started working on this project called Weave, W-E-I-V. It was based on these visions that I would get during worship. So I would go to a church and worship, and I would get these, they were kind of like experiential visions, you know? It wasn't just like watching a movie when I would receive it. It was something that I could participate in that has a sense of presence and a certain sense of interaction. With those visions came this feeling of urgency that I needed to make them. And so I started doing that and blogging about it. And Ryan left a comment on my blog. And at the time, he was working for Soma Games, which, of course, you know, Chris was just on the podcast. So So he was working at Soma. And I was like, oh, hey, I know Soma Games. You guys are great. And so we just got to talking. And eventually he went freelance, and we actually started working on a contract together just to save up money and, you know, with the hopes that we could do our own personal projects at the time. And we decided, hey, why don't we work together? You know, we got to know each other better. It seemed like we were both really passionate about video games and about sharing our faith through them, and even had a similar vision for what that would look like. You know, how that would be executed. So we decided to do something together. You know, we thought maybe it would be poetic kids games or, you know, little mobile games or something like that. Eventually he suggested, hey, what if we did an art installation based on my journey, you know, what we've gone through with Joel, and it would be these series of digital paintings that you could interact with for 20 to 30 seconds, something like that. So we started working on that for a couple months. It was sort of aimless wandering. And eventually we decided to go more in a video game direction specifically, and brainstorm some ideas for that. It was this like half real world, you know, kind of understanding what the Greens went through, and half allegorical fantasy world.
Yeah.
And that's when we went to GDC in 2013. With the demo that was just the real world part. The fantasy part was like kind of half finished and, you know, it wasn't ready to be shown to anybody. Yeah. And so we met some people, pitched the idea, and everyone was like, I don't really understand this fantasy part, so you should just focus on the real world thing. So we essentially scrapped half our game and decided to just focus on, you know, sort of a dramatized, interactive retelling of their journey. It definitely has a lot more fantasy elements. I don't mean fantasy in like the orcs and wizards sense, but fantasy in terms of, you know, things like artistic, supernatural, or, you know, non-realistic things happening. So,
yeah. Like ruminations and thoughts about what ifs and things like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, and you've been involved in this from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, we started the project together in November of 2012, so it's been a little over 2 years, and we kind of both share design tasks. Ryan really wanted to do a lot of the art, so after the first few months, you know, I helped him out with like establishing good art direction and just providing advice on visual design, you know, stuff like that. But for the most part, he's done a lot of the art. So I've mostly been doing like design, programming. You know, back when I was starting God at Play in 2009, I got involved with this community called Not Games. And it was just sort of like a think tank or, you know, a place, a forum where developers could discuss, you know, experiential parts of video games and basically aspects of video games that aren't specifically the game part, you know. Yeah. And I think that really influenced our title a lot. So to answer your question earlier about, like, where's my voice in the game, the fact that this is more of like a experiential poetic thing is sort of like part of the direction that I was going with my own work.
That's really cool.
I think that kind of has influenced this project a bit. And then also, I kind of specialize in like programmatic animation and programming, real-time visuals and stuff like that.
Yeah. So and I've seen some of your, 10-minute, what exactly is it called? But the 10-minute artwork pieces that you guys create, and just in very short periods of time, you create like really, really stunning 3D artwork. And I found that really impressive.
Yeah. Thanks. Render Sketch Game. Yeah.
Yeah. Render Sketch Game. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that's sort of my background, and there are parts of that Dragon Cancer where I take more of a game designer role. So there was that element as well. But yeah, that's basically how I got into it and kind of my role on the team.
So. I've been dying to ask you this, Josh. So you went to school for art. You said that was your major, and you know, you've done all this animation and stuff. What is it like for you programming? Like, how have you taken to that? How do you find it? Is it difficult? Is it just natural for you? Like, I just find it very strange, an artist being able to program.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because four of the five guys on our team are like, are kind of have several talents, including programming, which is kind of weird, I feel like. But yeah, for me specifically, I started learning QBasic when I was about 12 or so, and I've always done programming on the side since then. Hmm. So when I was in high school, I started doing freelance work with like Flash, you know, multimedia kind of projects, and I would start to get into ActionScript and doing programmatic animation that way. And then I got into web design and development over time. And that's basically how I started with programming, was doing scripting, web-oriented things. And then eventually, as I started to get more serious with game development, I just, you know, slowly learned programming, slowly beat my head against the wall for years, which I feel like is kind of the process with everyone.
Yeah.
You just beat your head against the wall until it's hardened, you know. And so, yeah, that's kind of my process. I guess I consider programming as like a means to an end.
Right.
And the end being like building this experience. So my ideal with programming is that it would become like sketching, where I could just pick up a pencil and doodle a little thumbnail really quickly, and then create a larger thumbnail, spend a little bit more time with it, and then slowly refine that, and then transfer that to an even bigger piece, you know. And so a process that's more like drawing and painting is kind of what I seek with programming. Sadly, in 2014, I feel like we've been stuck for 20 years in terms of like progressing how development works, with the exception of agile development practices. That has definitely been good way of progressing how development works, especially with video games. That makes perfect sense with prototyping and whatnot. But like in terms of the actual coding part, I just feel like I'm using these tools that are not prehistoric, but just very antiquated and slow, and that part is really frustrating, because I wish I could just sketch. I want so badly to sketch with code, and it's really difficult for me to do that. So that's kind of, yeah, how I view programming.
And that's really interesting. And that brings me back to, you had brought up Weave much earlier. And if I'm remembering correctly, was that the kind of worship tool that used Wiimotes?
Yes. Yeah, you basically move Wiimotes to music. And it's kind of like a VJ tool in the sense that you're creating visuals when you do that. And it's meant to go to be like a way to complement live music. So during worship, for example, you would have the worship band playing, especially if it's a contemporary worship setting. You know, you'd have a worship band, they're up on a stage, and then you'll have a screen that or multiple screens, you know, one of them might have lyrics, another one might have some kind of animated background or whatever. And the idea was you could you can like encourage more of the congregation to participate by allowing them to be part of, you know, creating those visuals that go with the music.
I really, really, really like that. And I see how that goes entirely with your concept of being able to sketch in code, and just that concept of real-time creation, I think is really fascinating. All right, Josh, there's one main last question that I really wanted to hear from you on the subject of That Dragon Cancer and the influence of the Christian game development community and the takeaway. And that's just simply that. What do you hope is the takeaway that you leave other devs with after making That Dragon Cancer? Like, what is your hope that, you know, people who play this and are Christians are like, okay, now I'm going to X or Y. What do you want that X or Y to be?
The first thing that comes to my mind is hug someone I care about. We really hope that this game can inspire people to value each other more as human beings, and to understand that you can love someone even though they aren't going to benefit you in some, you know, obvious way. So that's part of the reason why we don't have a lot of systems in our game, is because we're trying to communicate grace in a specific way. You know, there's plenty of ways that you can communicate grace, including using systems. But for our game, Joel couldn't really do much. And so it's sort of, if you choose to love Joel, it's not going to be because you're going to get some, you know, compelling reward or whatever.
Yeah, I really like that. I this is a terrible comparison, but it reminds me of in Half-Life how one of the takeaways from Half-Life was the lack of freedom. And they very much wove that into your choices, and that illusion of freedom that Gordon Freeman has throughout the game. And that actually endears you more to the nature of the game itself. Without, you know, people walking away and saying, I wish Half-Life was open world or something along those lines. So to take that back and bring that into That Dragon Cancer and say the absence of mechanical input is very much related to the theme and your actual takeaway. That's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I would say another thing is what it's like to have hope in the Valley of the Shadow of Death. A lot of people don't actually. So I'm at home on my kitchen table, and in front of me there's this book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
Yeah, I've heard about the theme of it.
Okay, my small group studied this book. We went through it together. It's really good. I would recommend it. One of the things in the book, one of the concepts that's discussed is, I think that it's just referred to as the wall, but the wall is like this point where you come to the end of yourself, and you have to confront the fact that you can't solve all your own problems. You know, like you come to this wall, and it's like it's almost an existential boundary. You know, it's something that you just can't solve, and you need God to be there. And it was suggesting that, like, every person has some kind of wall, and if you can have the courage to like confront that thing, whatever it is for you, that your experience doing that will strengthen your faith and will develop you emotionally, and you know, it just makes you healthier. So I hope that players can not necessarily confront that through the game, but can at least understand that idea in kind of a interactive, experiential way, and just think about it, you know, like think about how that would apply to their own lives.
If you can manage that, which I'm sure you will, that is as evangelistic as anything could be. Not that you're trying to be, but nothing is more important for someone to understand, whether they're a professing Christian or not, because many Christians don't get this either, which is we have a very, very big problem that we can't do anything about, our sin problem. And that's obviously where Christ comes in. And so we're constantly trying to even solve that problem ourselves, which obviously we can't do. So that's brilliant. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, the problem of evil is a major roadblock for people, I think. And that's, yeah, I would say that's a major theme of our game. And that's a major theme of our original demo. And I mm-hmm. think that's one thing that people relate to so strongly is we don't start with judgment, you know, when it comes to like how the Christian faith is represented in our game. We start right. with, well, for people who played the demo specifically, we're starting with like relating to their pain first. And yeah. then sharing the hope that we have second.
Right.
You know, when, yeah, I guess that's kind of like in a nutshell how the testimony of this game is shared. Is it's the Greens kind of, not just their pain, you know, also why they loved Joel. But
if, and that, that is.
But yeah, like in terms of relating to what has happened.
Right. That point is, to me, one of the, I think, is a really important takeaway for Christian developers to chew on, because that was the thing that I had not considered when I started out. And I think that's, I think, again, as we talked about the sort of the evolution of the, you know, the Christian developer, you know, hitting the pavement running and not realizing that, while, again, I would never try to dissuade someone who feels like they need to make an explicitly evangelistic game, the alternative mm-hmm. and the important part is presenting truth. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're doing is, which again, I have to just reiterate is brilliant, is presenting the truth that we cannot solve our problems, especially the most important one.
Yeah, that's good.
I have a question for you, Josh. You know, we talked about it earlier that you guys have just come off a successful Kickstarter, and I've researched kind of as much as I can get my hands on about Kickstarters you know, postmortems of them and all that stuff. And everything that I read is it's like, you know, the most stressful, crazy 30 days of your life. And so I'm curious, what was it like for you guys with That Dragon Cancer, especially on a spiritual side, as you were going through the Kickstarter?
I don't know. It's hard for me to look back on it because our first child between my wife and I, you know, we had a child, he was born October 23rd and our campaign started November 12th. So pretty insane.
Was that your first?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I had a baby the same day you guys launched your Kickstarter as well. So Avery was born November 12th.
I remember seeing the Facebook post, yeah. Yeah, so it's hard for me to, like, say anything because I feel like it's a pretty weird, abnormal situation. you know, like, obviously no one would ever want to plan that intentionally. So I guess for me personally, it wasn't stressful in like the I'm pulling out my hair sense, but it was a lot of work for sure. Yeah, it was for, I would say, a good month. It was Ryan and I working full time, both of us working full time, preparing it, and I'd say maybe the first week running it. After that, it was a little easier, and we were able to work on the game a little bit. Although you could argue that there, we missed a couple updates that we should have, you know, quote unquote, should have done if you followed the standard advice or whatever. But I guess, you know, along with the theme of the Green's journey, one thing they learned was to try not to strive. Ryan calls it flailing, and to rest in faith. And so we've kind of adopted that as a development lifestyle, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We try not to strive too much, and we just have faith that that God will keep us safe and, you know, has the best things in mind for us. Obviously, we try to do what we can to put ourselves in a situation where, you know, we're not going to be in trouble. But in terms of, like, the Kickstarter, there's definitely more that we could have done. But at some point, it just seems like you're going to run up against that feeling where, you know, this kind of feels like too much and that I'm not resting in faith. And so there's certainly things that we decided not to do that we kind of went against the standard advice. But there are definitely a lot of seeds that we have planted over the last couple years. And for me, like, doing indie games since 2005 or whatever, I planted a lot of seeds with relationships and stuff, and we were able to kind of use that to deepen relationships and kind of introduce people to this game, and, you know, just sort of seeing all that come to fruition was a cool thing. And that's something that you can't really do if you're starting from scratch and wanting to do a Kickstarter. So yeah. I could see how for other developers who aren't already in the community or who don't already have relationships established, you have to put a lot of work because, you know, there are so many other developers who are going to do a Kickstarter when they either have a name for themselves coming from some other studio, or, you know, there's like some other thing that they have built up over time. And I'd say to some degree we had that just from relationships in the indie community by the time we did our Kickstarter. So,
yeah, the reason I ask is as a Christian business owner, you know, owning your own business and having employees and expenses and all this stuff is all very stressful. And, you know, there's many times where I'm on my knees praying for money and, you know, for accounts receivables to come in, you know, so I can make payroll and all this other kind of stuff. And so, again, what I've read is doing the Kickstarter can be so incredibly stressful because you only have this 30-day window in which to achieve it or not. And so I wondered what that looked like for you guys. And I think in your answer was, you know, at some point there's a piece that comes that surpasses understanding. Is that kind of what you said?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think one thing that could help that we didn't do is preparing more updates beforehand. We didn't really do that. We pretty much did all of our updates like several days before. So that's definitely something that you know, would cause both more time and preparation, but hopefully also save some stress. I mean, not that like you're going to plan your entire update, but there are large chunks that you can kind of prepare beforehand that would help.
Yeah, and so the I just find that really, really fascinating because I work with non-Christians, And I see this sense of, at the end of the day, everything is on their shoulders. And so they push themselves harder and harder and harder. I see that again when I read the Grand Theft Auto biography, of how they just have this overwhelming sense, it's all on my shoulders, I have to do it, and such. And so what was nice to hear is that, yes, you know, obviously took responsibility and worked your hardest and whatever, but there comes a point where you're like, it's not all on my shoulders. You know, there is someone else out there that can take care of the things for me.
Yeah, I would say for us that where that like was most obviously seen was in how we interface with the public and with press and stuff like that. You know, you guys mentioned like our project has received a lot of attention in the press, but we actually haven't done a lot of pushing. We've just kind of like made something and waited, you know. I mean, that's kind of maybe a little exaggerated when I simplify it down to a single sentence.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've gone to all these shows and stuff like that. But in terms of like big cold email blasts or cold calling or whatever, we've done very little of that. And I think that's like that's kind of our main reasoning behind it, is that it can just add a lot of stress and feel like you're trying to fight for something when, at least for our project, it seems like God has blessed it in an amazing way, and that we shouldn't have to fight, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's good. Thomas, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, I do. I just want to know, because you're at this crossroads, Josh. I imagine. I mean, I'm kind of putting myself in your shoes, thinking about this. You have you have the press. You have the successful Kickstarter. You're working on this game that not a lot of people have played. There's been a demo at some shows and stuff. It could really go either way. You know, it could be well received, or it could be you know, poorly received by critics, saying, you know, what kind of game is this and blah, blah, blah. Right. So I'm just curious, what do those two scenarios kind of look like for you guys, especially on a spiritual side? And the reason I say on a spiritual side is because at the CGDC that we were talking to some of the makers of Adam's Venture, and because Adam's mm-hmm. Venture was yeah. so poorly received, mm-hmm. Well, not so much the reception, but just how they kind of lost funding halfway through the project and all this stuff. It caused one of the creators to walk away from his faith, right? Like, his faith was so wow. wrapped up in the creation of that game that when it failed budget-wise, you know, to do what he wanted to do, it crushed his faith. And I'm not expecting that, you know, this game is going to crush your faith, but it's just – there's definitely – they're connected, right? And that's why I'm yes. just – I'm just very curious what your honest human answer is to that.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I feel very passionate about this idea. What you said, okay, first of all, what you said reminds me of something that I'm passionate about, so I'm not speaking directly to the situation of Adam's Venture and their developers specifically. I just want to preface that.
Yeah.
Because it just reminded me of something I'm very passionate about, which I don't know the situation, so I don't know if they're related or not. But what it reminded me of was this idea of where you place your identity. And when you're an indie game developer, especially, or like especially if you're making a game completely by yourself, which is kind of crazy, I think, you could easily spend 3 or 4 years on it. Or maybe it's a team of 2 or 3, whatever. And pretty soon that project, you're like putting parts of yourself in it. It's very personal. You go around and you show it, and people start to recognize you as the developer of that game, and you just seem like linked together, you know, in this very intimate way that like you can't even really, no matter what you can do, you can't tear them apart, you know. And I think that's it's a way that you can get deceived, I think, because what ends up happening is your game becomes your identity instead of something else. And then what happens is either you release your game, which means however people respond to it, you take it personally. And I don't mean like in a surface level, like, oh, he took that personally. I mean, like, you really, you know, like anything anybody says about it, they're saying about you and about your entire existence. You know, it could be that. It could be just the fact that it's released means you're not even working on it anymore. And so you just feel like you're floating or you're falling. You know, I don't know if you've ever like been in a situation where something terrible happens and you feel like you're falling.
Yep.
I think all of that comes about when you put your identity in what you're doing instead of who you are. And that's something that is really important about the Christian faith, I think, because we are children of God, and the Bible has, you know, all of this language in it that talks about our identity and how it's not about us, it's not about what we do, it's about the fact that God loves us, that we're his children, you know, that depending on which part you're reading, that we're royalty. And so all of that identity has like nothing to do with like what I'm doing in any given day. But through faith in him, you know, I can bring him glory by doing the work that I do, you know, and I can share the gospel, depending on if I'm called to do that, by doing the work, that I do. And so that's how I view it. And that's why I think, like, even if this game isn't successful, for me personally, it's not gonna hurt me, because, I mean, it'll hurt my pride. And that certainly happened before, you know, on projects where I put a lot into it. But, you know, in terms of, like, affecting my faith or my relationships with other people, it's not going to impact those, because I put my identity in being a child of God and, you know, being loved by God. So, but that's, you know, for this game, it's easy for me to say that as opposed to like Ryan or Amy. So, so yeah, this is a really personal project. But yeah, I've invested a lot of my savings and a lot of my time and passion and so much into this project. But at the end of the day, I still believe in God. I still think he loves me. So, yeah, I think that's a very dangerous trap that you can fall into as a developer.
Yeah, and I like the way that C.S. Lewis puts it in the Narnia, where the kids show up and they're kings and queens of Narnia.
Yeah.
Just getting at that identity.
Yeah.
Cool.
Last segment of the show time. So I'd like to bring up Papers, Please. Thomas, would you like to explain what Papers, Please is?
Sure. Papers, Please is a customs officer simulator for basically Soviet, you know, communist style country. It's they're made up countries, and you run the customs office, and you have people in line that come through, and you have to look at their documents and decide whether or not you're going to allow them in the country or not. I guess the challenge or the thrill of the game is there really are people in line that are trying to get in with, you know, false passports or just not having the right documentation. And there's this whole secondary part where you get paid based on the number of people that you get through the line. If you let someone through you shouldn't have, you get penalized. The money that you make is used to support you and your family and such.
And Josh, you brought Papers, Please up because we wanted to talk about something that related to fatherhood or being a dad. Is that accurate, or would you describe it differently?
Yeah. And it's just, I think it's a compelling example of game that has gameplay, but also has like a emotional weight to it at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, to me, like, that's what makes it really interesting to me as a designer and as a player. I definitely want to see more games like this that have, you know, interactive gameplay to them and certain a certain degree of, you know, systems thinking in it, but yeah. also is able to evoke some strong emotions from time to time.
Yeah. I'm definitely a big fan of this idea of your actions dictating the story, and having that emergent quality, but also having like a very true to real world issues, and that conflict of morality and the dealing with bribes versus am I able to afford medicine for my son this week? Am I able to, you know, afford to heat my house this week? And all that conflict really helped me identify with my family, with my dad growing up, and how he just struggled very hard to provide for us as a family, and not having much in the way of money, and sometimes having to really question, you know, do we give this thing that we feel like we need money, or do we give that thing like we need money, and feeling kind of like a failure for not being able to do those things. I think Papers, Please really puts you in that tension of not necessarily feeling up to par as a dad. And for me personally, I didn't like that, so I put on easy mode. And so every time that I saw the end of the day, it said, easy mode crutch, 20 extra credits. And so I felt a little bit bad for doing that, but I also wanted to actually like finish the game and not feel like I have to socially engineer, because I'm really bad at looking at details. I'm really not good at this game. And so I felt like I needed easy mode for something that I don't typically feel like I need. But how about you guys? Because you guys are all dads. I'm the only one here who doesn't actually have any kids. How did you personally relate to the game in that sense of feeling that tension of, oh, I got to provide for my family, or was that just, how did you guys feel about that? How about you, Michael? How did you feel about that first?
Yeah, you know, I understand where people would feel that. I did not feel that way playing this game. I like the game, but I guess I should preface this by saying that, you know, under the Bartle test, I'm almost all killer as far as my gaming profile goes. And so, and I'm not a huge fan of puzzle type games. However, I did get into it. I mean, I did enjoy the sort of the challenge the way I approached the game, because again, I was sort of like me against a developer, you know, trying to slip guys past me. And that was sort of it. So I probably relished a little bit too much when I got to actually detain people. That I really enjoyed. I loved the theme. Growing up in the U.S. during the Cold War, this was like they did a really good job with such a minimal, you know, sort of, I don't want to say minimal effort, but you know, just with not a lot to work with, so to speak. They did a great job of really making me believe these were like Soviet bloc countries. That was I really like that. I thought there were a lot of neat touches to it. It was a very well designed game. It did not evoke the emotions aside from the ones that I mentioned, which probably I need to deal with in a small group or something. But my bottom line note on this game is, as you guys may or may not know, I run a law firm. That was like my job that I'm trying to shift out of to make video games. If I were hiring a new associate or a paralegal, I would just make them play this game. And if they stunk at it, it's a no. And it's just an excellent to me, you know, sort of like real quick way of seeing like, can you learn something that is not like anything else that you've really had to deal with before?
Yeah.
That I thought was sort of neat. So, Josh, you can't work at my law firm.
No, I definitely cannot.
Well, you can on easy mode.
No.
Just give me an easy mode law firm crutch and I'll be fine. I can handle up to 5 mistakes a day as long as you're all right with that.
So to answer M. Josh's question about evoking fatherhood emotions and thoughts, I'm newer to fatherhood. I guess not as new as Josh Larson is, but I'm newer, and I think that makes me more sensitive to it. I think, and maybe not. Maybe it's the opposite. But I didn't find the fatherhood side, or you know, the providing for the family side, like it evoked those kinds of things. Like for instance, when I was playing Bioshock Infinite when it came out, I had been a dad at that point for maybe 5 months. Yeah, about 5 or 6 months. And you know, when I found out about you know, Elizabeth being Booker's daughter and whatever, like that totally brought tears to my eyes. Like it just brought all this, I don't even know what to call it, this fatherhood jelly just came all over me. But Papers, Please did not do that. But what really impressed me was I did feel this sense of dread and care about my family, not so much in a fatherhood way, but just like, oh, I got this family that I really got to take care of. And it was a really interesting second vector to the game. And yeah. I think I was so overwhelmed by the game design brilliance that it in a way it shielded me from the emotional impact. Because I was just like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And wow, that's amazing. And wow, that's amazing, that I couldn't really feel negative thoughts at the same time.
Can you give an example of that? Like what was the wow, this is amazing things?
Well, the first thing about Papers, Please that blew me away was it so clearly, like a siren call, says anything can be a video game. Like really, like any subject matter can be a video game. Pew cleaning in a church can be an awesome video game. Yeah. You know, like anything can be a video game when you get down to a customs officer who's double checking if you have this kind of registration and that document and it's within these time periods and it's certified by, like, if you can make that a video game, anything can be a video game. And so that just blew me away.
And one of the things for me, just as you were describing that stuck out to me, was how the mechanical systems in the game don't get any simpler. They only get more layered. Yeah. And that's kind of evident early on. But then you have this – I was playing it on iPad because that just came out, and I really wanted to play it on iPad because I just have a harder – it's easier for me to play things in bed on iPad. So at the very top of the screen, you have the view of – the crowd, so you can see everyone who's standing in line trying to get through your customs booth, and then you see on the other side the security. And if you tap on the video feed, at first everything on your dashboard looks like it's just very aesthetic, but then you find out literally everything on your dashboard has a purpose and a mm-hmm. function, so that late in the game you start being helping to stop terrorist situations by tapping on either side, anticipating if it looks like someone's moving into the scene that shouldn't be there, you can take your key, put it in the little lockbox, pull out your tranquilizer gun, and start shooting guys. I was very, very surprised that this game had any kind of shooting component, because it definitely isn't a shooter on the box. But that's just one of the many layers that's added on top of everything else, on top of making sure that the documents are accurate and the daily changes and having to scan people and by the way, did you guys all turned the nudity off, right?
No, I definitely turned it on. I specifically, actually, I heard about how the game got rejected, so I concluded that the iPad version wouldn't have it. So I was actually, I shouldn't say excited, but I was like glad that it had it, because I thought that would play into the emotional part of it
definitely, like, plays into the shock value, because like the first time that you're not sure whether a person is a male or a female, and then you press the scan button and then you're like, oh yep, that's a penis.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that wasn't an issue at all, because the way that it's presented is in no way arousing, you know.
Yeah, it's not meant to be pornographic, and that was why ultimately Apple rescinded their rejection was because they realized, like, it's not actually pornographic. It's much more instructional and educational in the sense of, this is real world border agent issues of scanning people's bodies to see whether or not they have weapons. It's both a security issue and a privacy invasion issue. But it's also very funny the first time that you scan someone and you're like, wow, they're naked.
I think another thing that is so good about the game, just for anyone, but also for Christian game developers, is how it brings both a sense of dread to, like, as you're playing, you feel this pending, like I don't know, doom or something, and gloom is coming. It's such a highly emotional game, but when you look at it, like, aesthetically, the graphics are so simple and stuff. So Lucas Pope did an awesome job of just engaging the player's imagination. Like, he gives you just enough that it tweaks off your imagination and you fill in all the rest. And he didn't have to draw all of it and render all of it and worry about frame rate and all this other stuff. That's really great. But I really feel like the game has presence. You feel like you really are there. Like, the world, it's so small because you see the world from your booth and from a black screen with text on it. Like, that's the game world. But I got to tell you, I feel more in that world than many of these, AAA games that I'll play on my PS4 or something like that. Like, I just felt
more immersive than, like, Shadow of Mordor for me.
Yeah,
more immersive. I was playing them pretty close and back-to-back, yeah.
Yep, I agree.
I think a large part of that has to do with its excellent sound design.
Yeah.
The sound design was very well done. I was just really happy with that part of it.
Just the
I'm
sound
glad that you guys...
next.
Yeah, the voices, so well done. Mm. I'm glad that you guys said that you didn't really connect with the fatherhood part of it, because I totally agree. To me, actually, that moment when you have, like, the screen and you're trying to take care of people and it shows you, you know, at the end of the day, what your status is, that's when I realized how similar in some ways this game is to Oregon Trail. I was like, oh, yeah. So once I had that realization, that immediately reduced any, like, not any, but it reduced to some noticeable degree the amount of, like, emotional connection I had because it just reminded me of playing Oregon Trail as a kid and people getting dysentery and dying. Like that happens in Oregon Trail, that's basically what happened to me very early on. I think it was, like, maybe the second or third day. My wife and child died.
Oh, wow.
And I played the entire game, well, almost the entire game, without them.
I made a boatload of money.
So, yeah, I... No, I didn't. But I survived, I guess. I think the sound design was well done. Yeah. I would also say, like, even though it's pixel art and it's simplified, there's definitely some good nuance to the animations and stuff. So there were areas where it could have been simpler, but I'm glad that it wasn't. For example, when someone steps into the booth, there's a very specific way that he does the animation of the people coming in that makes it seem more lifelike and believable and increases immersion. Hmm. So I was really pleased with how he did that part of it. And even, like, you know, you flip the lever and the gate, like, opens and shuts, you know, how little details like that are really nice touch. One thing I agree with. Yeah. Even though I didn't connect as much in terms of the family aspect, one thing that I kept thinking about a lot that I would love to hear your guys' take on is the idea of serving the authorities. I don't know if that passage in the Bible trips you guys up.
Yeah.
Romans but it does 13. For me, especially when I'm driving, because whenever I'm driving, I'm usually speeding.
it's confession time.
Yeah, and I often think about, like, you know, I'm not obeying the authorities, and I should be. And so that actually made it a little bit easier for me to play the game because of that passage in scripture. I felt like I had a little bit more, or maybe I should say a little bit less responsibility for some of my decisions because I was just doing my job. Now, with that said, there were definitely parts in the game where I made specific intentional decisions that weren't necessarily in favor of the authorities, but like the core of my job where I'm deciding which people to allow through and which people not to allow through, to me, like that didn't have as much of an emotional aspect to it because it's my job to make sure, you know, that they're, that they have all their paperwork, and the fact that they don't isn't really my fault, you know, even if like it's super frustrating for them, you know, it just reminds me of like if you're trying to get your own passport or trying to file documents to the IRS, it's frustrating when you mess something up, but at least like it's not like an injustice most of the time, I should say. You know, so I guess that part of it was really interesting to me, and I'm just wondering if anybody else felt the same way.
I thought that I see what you're saying. It did a good job of getting me to role play in that way, but I didn't play it like I would if I were actually in the booth. The one that I think about is, and I'm sure everybody got it. It was there was the husband and wife come to the booth, and so the husband gets in, and then the wife is like, and he says, "Oh, my wife's behind me," and then the wife comes up, and she doesn't have the right credentials, and now you're faced with, do you let her in, and you're going to get hit with the fine or not? Well, I didn't let her in. She didn't have the right stuff, and because I'm a dutiful servant for the country, and so I didn't let her in. But if in real life that was the case and it was simply a financial impact, I would have let her in. I know there's 100% chance I would have let her in. If I was going to like get shot or go to jail, then I'd have to think about it. But if it was just money, I would have let her in. And so for me, that was the impact the game had on me. It was just like kind of, again, like I said, just letting me role play. And that's fun. I think that's good. It didn't necessarily make me sort of analyze. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it did. I just did analyze myself, but in a sort of different way. But I guess the point is it didn't, you know, sort of draw out what I would actually do. But it did. It did help me, I guess, examine it a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's something that something that Kevin Shutt talks about a lot. In his book Of Games and God, and also in a lot of the things that he's written about. So I think that that'll be really exciting if we're able to get him on the show.
Hey, we should get him on the show.
Yeah. and talk a lot more about that the ethic of making the decisions. Are you the player? Are you not the player? That sort of thing.
Yep.
So just on that, like role playing, and kind of to Josh's question, I didn't think so much about my responsibility to authority as you were asking, Josh, but playing the game, this is, I think, another takeaway for Christian game developers, because it's something that I think we strive to do, most of us anyway, is this game actually made me more compassionate. By role-playing as a customs officer of, you know, a Soviet bloc country, it made me more compassionate. And when I worked at an e-commerce company downtown Toronto, I worked in a cube area of four guys. One was from Romania, one was from Latvia, and one was from Ukraine. And all these guys lived under the Soviet government and everything, and then were freed and then, you know, able to come and work in Canada and all that stuff. And so, you know, I would talk with them about, you know, what it was like, and they hated communism, and, you know, they would talk about how hard it was to get certain things in life and all this stuff. But playing this game gave me a window into how these guys grew up. Like is it perfect? No, but it gave me a sense that I never had before of what these guys I worked with grew up with. And I think that's the great power and possibility of gaming.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Well said.
Cool. Do we have anything else that we want to mention about Papers, Please? And I guess the one thing that we need is, what is the takeaway that you would say for Papers, Please is for Christian game developers?
I did have one other thing to add. There was a really interesting moment in the game for me, and that was when I received a bomb, and I had to defuse it. Did you guys have that happen?
Yeah, I had that happen once, and it was really easy. Was it easy for you, or did I just get a different scenario?
It was easy. At the time, I wasn't taking it very seriously, and I blew it up. just because I wasn't paying very close attention. Because, you know, I'm just sitting on a couch with an iPad. But I was like, oh yeah, right, I had to pay attention to this game. and so I defused the bomb, and then I was supposed to like give it back to the guard, and this was the same guy that wanted me to like pay me under the table to detain people, which I never really did, by the way.
I did a lot. I felt not bad about it, which was weird.
I didn't do that. That was an example of where like it didn't bother me to kind of rebel in that way. I guess I played it more in a role playing sense. Yeah. But that bomb, I tried to hold on to it like for as long as I could, and I realized that the game wasn't prepared for that response. And so much of the rest of the game is totally ready for how you want to play it. And so this was an interesting moment where, like, there's this really serious thing, and I decided, like, no, I'm just going to hold on to this thing. And the clock is still ticking, you know, like the daily clock. So it gets all the way to the end, and I'm thinking, oh, great, you know, like me holding on to this, the game isn't really ready. I'm totally going to lose this day. And then it's just like waiting and waiting and waiting. And so finally, I think I gave him the bomb back or whatever, but the day had already passed. And then it was kind of weird because like a handful of people came through, even though it was the end of the day and like they shouldn't have been able to. And then finally, you know, the day ended and I had lost a bunch of money that day. But I thought that was a really interesting moment that I made this decision to kind of like rebel against this soldier or the guard, and it was kind of like also rebelling against this game in some way, exploiting this loophole that wasn't considered, I guess.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Cool. So, how about the rest of you guys? What do you think is the takeaway for Papers, Please? What is the thing that we can learn from that in making other games?
I've already covered the things that I wanted to.
Yeah, same here. And actually, I'll steal Thomas's answer. I mean, you can make a game out of anything if it's if it's done well. Yeah.
Yeah, that is the really good takeaway. Cool.
I think for me, like I said, the kind of how it has like these evocative moments to it, but also has a degree of gameplay, and how that combines is very compelling to me. I think the other thing, like takeaway that I get, is how it teaches brutalism, and how like through the aesthetics of the game, through its systems and its dynamics, it gives you this picture of like a brutal worldview of how you should, you know, run a government and how you should treat people, and like how people respond to that even. And I thought that was a really interesting way, way to communicate that idea through something that's unique to video games.
And yeah, no, that's really neat.
You guys, somebody, I can't remember who it was, somebody was talking about that weight that you have, like this sort of dread. And to me, that is a really apt way to describe communism. know? Or I should say, like, not the ideal of communism, but the reality of communism.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess that's a good point to end the show on. Josh, do you have any final thoughts before we end the show?
I love how video games, including Papers, Please, can cause you to think about ethical, moral, and, in our case, biblical choices. So. Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, Josh, thank you so much for being on the show with us. I know we took up a lot more of your time than we anticipated, but I thank you so much for being here with us and really thinking through everything and just being a great guest.
Thank you. Yeah, this was great.
Josh, do you have like 5 minutes?
Yeah, no problem.
I wanted to run a question by you guys. I was thinking about it, and it doesn't really pertain to anything. We were talking about making choices and how, like, there's so much time in between. Now, in modern games, there's, like, so much time in between choices that we have to make. But back then, I think this is when we were talking about Trade Wars, how it's just, decision after decision. And the thought – and I'm with Thomas on this. Like, I'm not a huge fan of cutscenes and all that, and I'm – again, action fiend and all that. Okay. But it kind of made me think, is there some value to having some gaps between the choices so that you can sort of savor them and so that they have each one has more weight? And as I say it, it doesn't sound good to me, but I'd be open to the idea that maybe I'm missing something. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that, and especially while we had Josh on the line.
Yeah, that's a great point. It depends is the short answer, which I always kind of hate that answer. It's kind of a cop out, but allow me to unpack that. I know what you guys are saying. Between decisions is done in AAA games is very awkward and weird, and I definitely can relate to what you're saying and kind of the way that some of these older games can be refreshing because they're not. It's like they're a lot of the fat has been trimmed from them, you know? Mm-hmm. However, on the way that you can do it well, I feel like, is to build a world that has a sense of presence, atmosphere, depending on the kind of game that you want to make, and basically just like a place where you want to focus on being instead of doing. And to me, that's the value of the space in between decisions, is to focus on really being good instead of doing. And obviously, you know, for Christians, that's a really important part of our faith. But with video games, it really depends on how you execute that. For our game specifically, really most of our game is about that space in between decisions. You're still making decisions kind of from time to time. I feel like because, you know, we're being really intentional about it, it will be more successful than not. Right. With a lot of the frustration of that in AAA games, it's because it's not being done in an intentional way. Or it's kind of like I feel like sometimes it can be kind of like a spork where it's really not good at either of those things because you're trying to do it all at once. So I don't know. That's my feelings on it.
Okay. Well, if my take on it, because I've just been reveling in games from the 80s and 90s for the last like 2 weeks, when I brought that up, I meant it in this, not in the sense of like moral choices or moral decisions or like story point decisions, just decisions like, oh, there's something for me to decide right now. So in using Trade Wars as the example, it's like, oh, am I going to go to this sector or that sector, or am I going to trade, or do something else? Like, it's like bang. And then I go to that sector and then I'm faced with another choice. Which sector am I going to go to now? Bang. And I go there, and it's also instant. So, I compare that to, when I was playing Mass Effect 2, it's like, oh, I want to go from this sector to that sector. Well, there's like all this flying and whatever. I got to get out of the sector, and then I got to go through the thing, and I got to watch this woo, 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 woo. And then, psh, and I fly. And then now I'm in the sector and I can actually get to the planet. I'm using a travel example, but there's many, many things like, you know, when in Trade Wars, when you're at the main star dock and you're going from the bank to the federal place, to the shipyards, to the, it's just like you hit A, boom, you're there, and you buy something, and then you hit someone, boom, you're there, and you buy something. you know, I love Arrested Development, the TV show. You know, your question is like, oh, you know, is there more savoring by spacing them apart? I love Arrested Development because the jokes are just like bang, 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 bang. It's like machine gun comedy. And you would think that it would be funnier if you were given more space to like appreciate. But I think it's almost like at a brain or chemical level that it just keeps hitting you that that's what makes it more enjoyable, because almost in a sense you don't fully grasp it, and that keeps it really fresh and really new. And that's what I find when I'm playing these games. I'm just like, wow, I can like do this, and now I can do this, now I can do this. Maybe it's corrupting me as a human being, and now I have ADHD and I didn't before.
Well, I hear exactly what you're saying about Arrested Development and that machine gun comedy. I think it's definitely a genre and a topical thing. When you're talking about comedy and when you're talking about action, I think that the immediacy keeps that enjoyment level up. But when you start dealing with more thoughtful themes, like you brought up Mass Effect 2 as a great example. And Mass Effect 2 does have really awkward traversal, not nearly as awkward as the first game. but then you get then I've been playing, like I said, Inquisition. And in Inquisition, well, that's an awkward statement, you have this, you get to the castle. You finally get to the castle. The thing that you didn't realize was the main point of the game, because you thought that the whole game was summed up in the first 18 hours. But there's actually, you were just playing the intro of the game.
Just to interrupt you, by the way, that's the way I felt in Red Dead Redemption. Like when I finally got to Mexico, I was like, woohoo, I won the game. What? Wait a minute. More missions?
Yeah, yeah. Wow, you just got to the second quarter of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
In Inquisition, the thing that really stood out to me is that now that I'm in this stronghold, I literally just spent this time soaking in the environment, talking to everyone there. And BioWare's always done this thing where you know where the characters are going to be in your main place, and you can go there and you can talk to them. And it's not required. It doesn't necessarily forward things. It might forward the romance story or whatever, if that's what you want to do. But if you just want to take in and be... you can just take in and learn about the people that you're with. And I think that that's something that is what allows for the game to engage in the subject of faith in a really unique way, simply because it's in this quiet, nowhere near combat scenario. Like you're not going to get into combat in the stronghold, maybe not unless they trigger that event, if that ever happens. But you have this safety of being able to really wrestle with, do I believe these things? Do I not believe these things? Or if you're not role-playing, does my character believe these things? Or if you're not role-playing as yourself, per se, but you're really, like, questioning, you know, the subject of belief and taking the time to really self-examine or navel gaze or whatever you want to call it.
I agree with that. Josh's statement was dead on for me. Focus on being instead of doing. And by the way, I'm totally using that in my next update for my game. So thanks for that blurb. And I think that's where you've got to bifurcate the show Arrested Development from games, because I love Arrested Development, but I'm not going to stare at a TV with just like the house. And like for 30 minutes and just be like, oh, look at this beautiful furniture. Nothing's going on, and just soak it all in.
Interrupt for a second. I think the equivalent of Arrested Development in games would be Goat Simulator. And that aspect of there's always something going on. It never stops trying to be funny. It's just a go, go, go kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And it's not exactly. Yeah. You're focused on doing instead of being. And, right. and what M. Josh is talking about in Dragon Age, although I haven't totally gotten into that in that particular game, but I have in other games like Fallout 3, I can just run around that environment forever. I love it.
Yeah.
So you know, there's some you know, personal affinities there, but that the idea that we are that we might be creating a place where people would want to just kind of chill out and look around, I think that is that you nailed it as far as the right way to do it versus the wrong way to do it. So yeah, thanks for sharing that.
One thing about what I was talking about, these decisions, like you're asking about, you know, space for the decision and ramifications and stuff in playing like Trade Wars, when you can make these decisions, you can make multiple decisions a minute, literally, like depending on what you're doing, but it's turn-based. So you literally can take as long as you want, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to decide where I'm going to send my subspace ether probe and, you know, to try and find trade routes in the galaxy. I'll spend like 8 minutes staring at charts and looking at stuff, trying to find, you know, the optimal place to send my subspace probe and stuff. So I like the turn-based mechanic, because it lets you make decisions as quickly or as slowly as you want. Mm. So in a sense, the game always has perfect pacing.
You know what? Yeah. Also, you know who also does that really well is Mount and Blade. When you can run around the city and run to the shop and do all that stuff, or you can just pull up a menu, click where you want to go, and you're there. And I love that. I love having that option.
Yeah, I feel like that's part, like, ultimately, it seems like that's part of the problem is the pacing and it not being how you want to experience it. You know, that's the thing that's so nice about turn-based games, especially ones that have like a snappy response like you're talking about, Thomas.
Yeah.
That you get to control the pacing. And, you know, like when you read about Jesus' ministry in the Bible, you especially... if it's, I think it's in the book of Mark, right? Isn't that the one that's like really fast paced kind
Mark
of short, almost action. Like an action? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the comic book, graphic novel, gospel.
Yeah. And in that, you have like all this action, and then all of a sudden, Jesus like goes away, you know, and has a retreat. And then all of a sudden, you have all this action, and then he has a retreat. So there's still a rhythm, like even to his ministry. And, you know, I feel like with a game that's done really well, it's either happens to be the exact pacing that you like anyway, or it gives you the control as the player to determine that pacing.
In music, the whole notes amplify the rest of the bars.
Yeah, it's like trying to have a good dynamic range, you know?
Yeah.
Guys, that ends the show for today. Once again, my name is M. Joshua. I've been your host. And with me is Thomas Henschel and Michael Eustabines. Do you guys have anything else that you want to say or just say goodbye?
No, it's been great. Thanks thanks for coming on, Josh.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed our Radiance podcast. If you have any thoughts, we would really, really love to hear about whatever you think about our show. Please go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating if you think that we deserve it. You can also find out a lot more by going to our website, our brand new fancy swanky website, which is radiancegamedev.com. There you can get all sorts of show notes, links to our guests' projects, and also email us any questions that you have or any thoughts that you'd like about the show at hosts@radiancegamedev.com. So thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, I'm M. Joshua, and this has been the Radiance Game Dev Podcast.